We'll go to San Francisco and, well, spoof many things. I mean, that's what the Spike Jonze Show was about. Spike Jonze was famous for spoofing the classics. And tonight he's got a great spoof of the Opera Quiz, which I can only assume is his takeoff on the Metropolitan Opera broadcasts, which had begun, about 18 years before. Since this is a show from 1949, we'll have some auto racing to the sound of one of Spike Jonze's favorite spoofs, namely The Dance of the Hours by Ponchielli, and also some send-ups of This Is Your FBI. They have a great title for that. And their spoof of The Whistler also, shows we'll be hearing later on tonight. Their guest tonight, Don Ameche, in this broadcast from June 25th, 1949.
Coca-Cola presents The Spike Jonze Show with Spike and the City Slickers, including Doodles Weavers, Professor Fiedelbaum, George Rock, Dick and Freddie Morgan, Sir Frederick Gass, Jack Dolly, Dr. Horatio Q. Birdbath, and our special guest, Don Ameche. What are you doing tonight? Asks the voice at the other end of the phone. And first thing you know, a party's in the making. Saturday night is a night for get-togethers. If you're expecting people over, how about stepping down to the corner store for a couple of cartons of Coke? Or take the car and bring home a case from the grocery or service station. Then there'll be enough Coca-Cola on ice, no matter how many unexpected guests drop in. Tonight we're broadcasting transcribed from San Francisco. And now, here are Spike Jonze and the City Slickers.
Will you wait a minute?
What's the matter, Mr. Jonze?
Well, I'm ashamed of the way you're playing. What'll the people of San Francisco think of us? Especially after the wonderful welcome they gave us. Why, when our train pulled into the San Francisco station, they had a big sign on the platform.
What did it say?
San Francisco.
They call her Frivola Sal, a peculiar sort of a gal, with a heart that was mellow and old, and good fellow was my old pal. Pure trouble, sorrows, and cares, she was always willing to share. A wild sort of devil, but dead on the level, was my gal, Sal.
Thank you, music lovers. With those formalities out of the way, we turn to our weekly musical roundtable discussion. Three experts from my orchestra have seated themselves and are ready to start. Gentlemen, tonight our subject is opera. Dr. Richard Morgan, what do you think of Mascagni's Cavalleria Rusticana?
I didn't even know he bought one.
Ah, this whole thing is a waste of time. You don't know the first thing about opera.
Oh, no? Ask me about any opera. I know all their names.
Okay. How many operas do you know that begin with D?
Don Giovanni, D. Volcheri.
How many operas do you know that begin with T?
Trovatore, Tosca, Traviata.
How many operas begin with X?
Excerpts from La Boheme.
Okay, Dr. Morgan, that'll be enough. Now I see our second expert has skipped up to the microphone.
Mr. Jones, as far as opera is concerned, I have given much thought to opera.
Wait a second, will you? Take it easy, will you? The people of San Francisco don't know you. Would you please tell them your name?
Why, of course. I am Henry J. Kaiser.
Look, your name is Sir Frederick Gass. You're not Henry J. Kaiser.
Are you sure?
I am, Sir Frederick.
You're Sir Frederick? Well, then who am I?
You're Sir Frederick, silly.
Sir Frederick, silly? I thought I was Sir Frederick Gass.
Let's start all over again. I'll call you Amos, and you call me Andy.
Oh, that's ridiculous. I'm not Amos.
I know.
I'm the kingfish.
Will you please cut out this nonsense?
Whatever you say, Brother Andy.
Stop it, Sir Frederick. Let's get to our musical roundtable discussion. Tonight, we're talking about the opera. Do you know anything about it?
Why, only last week I saw Carmen.
Well, suppose you tell us what Carmen is about.
Well, I'd be glad to. In the first act, Carmen is working in a cigarette factory, and she falls into the cigarette machine, and she gets all wrapped up in the paper, and she comes out looking like a king... Oh, my... In the second act, yeah, that's a good act, Carmen meets Don Jose, who is a bullfighter, and he throws a bull. And she catches it. I'm going to catch it if I... In the third act, I like that act. Carmen goes to the bullfight, and she sees the matador, the picador, and the revolving door. Oh, I'm going round in circles. Say, would you like to hear Ghost Riders in the Sky?
Thank you, Sir Frederick Gass. Now here's our third expert, our four-year-old child prodigy, 280 pounds of George Rock. Well, Georgie, are you having a good time in San Francisco?
Oh, yeah. My mommy took me on the cable car. When the car got to the top of a big hill, I sneaked up and released the brake.
Mercy, what happened?
We beat the ferry to Oakland by 3 minutes.
What else did you do? Uncle's in Alcatraz?
Yeah. He thinks he's a mix master.
A mix master?
He's going stir crazy.
And now here's Dick Baldwin singing the title number from the new picture, It Happens Every Spring.
Happens every spring, the world is young again. again. We're children on an ups-a-daisy swing. A carousel with horses freshly painted. The oom-papa that says, let's get acquainted. What is that cheer I heard? A fellow stealing third. Your neighbor's boy became a home run king. Your dad rolls up his sleeves to clean the attic. Your 16-year-old sister goes dramatic. It happens. Yes, it happens every spring. The tears that go with sulfur and molasses. The outstretched nickels when an ice cream wagon passes. A rippling stream sounds like a rippling heart. As Mother Nature proudly spreads her new green carpet. Be patient, lonely one. Your love will come along. Your autumn heart will find a song to sing. Then raindrops will be dancing to the tune of it. The carefree day and April, May and June of it. And remember, it never rains but what it pours. And maybe raindrops will be whispering, the spring is yours. Be patient, lonely one. Your love will come along. It happens. It always happens every spring.
Michael Roy speaking for the Coca-Cola Company.
At the fair, at amusement parks, at ball games, the circus, or the movies, in fact, wherever you go to spend carefree summertime hours, there's ice-cold Coca-Cola ready to provide the pause that refreshes. When good times are in the air, Coke is at hand to help make play refreshing.
Thank you, Mike, and now...
Bye, go Spike!
Professor Fiedelbaum. Professor, how do you like it up here in San Francisco?
Oh, I love it. You know, I went to school up here.
Stanford?
Yeah, Stanford 37. UCLA nothing. Spike, I've had several requests for Punky Alley's Dance of the Hour.
Oh, that's the one in which you described the Indianapolis automobile race. Well, I'll get the city slickers together and you climb up into the broadcasting booth and let's go. Thank you.
afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Doodles Weaver in the press box in Indianapolis. It's a beautiful day for the races out here. The sun is out, not a cloud in the sky. 150,000 people are waiting for this great event. What a spectacle. What a wonderful spectacle. I'll describe the whole thing now. And the boys are ready to go. They're coming down the straightaway. Now they're bunched together. I believe it's a perfect start as they go down there. And there they go! Car number 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, Jack. Jack, hit me again, dealer.
No.
Into the back, that those cars are all going bunched together. I don't see how they can avoid an accident, but some way they avoid the accident. Number 10 is the first car by the stands. Here he comes at 135 miles an hour down the street. Here comes number 10. Oh, circle number 10 right now. Car number 3, 4, 9. A wreck! A wreck! A man skidding around out of control up in the far turn. Unless he's careful, he's going to hit the fence. Please don't hit the fence. He'll hit the fence. Don't hit the fence. He hit it. Ladies and gentlemen, there's been a very slight accident on the far turn involving 35 cars. I have my assistant on the track. I'm going to ask my assistant, Glibwicket, to take it down there. It's all yours, but be careful as you cross the track.
Well, thank you very much. I'm down on the track now. And as I cross the track, number 3 went by there. As I cross the track, 4 went by there. Well, here's the driver, Driver Gentry. Say a word or two so everybody will know you're perfectly okay. Didn't turn the driver that car. He's all right. Take it upstairs. We're signing off. Whoop.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Doodles. We are back in Stanford to finish the race. The best man out here today is number 13. That boy is really moving here. There he goes now. Passing everybody, cutting in and out, driving like a madman into the far turn down the straightaway. There he goes again. Every eye is glued on that car. Looks very funny with all those eyes glued on it. There he goes again. Look at him go. There he goes again. He went by twice. Here's a little midget racer doing very well. Look at that little midget coming down the straightaway. Here comes the midget. The midget racer went by. P-38, where did that come from? Now around the turn, setting a record down the straightaway. The crowd is going mad as he comes down here. Watch this man come down here. I believe he's going to be the winner. He's coming down to the finish line. Here he comes, and there goes the winner!
Now I'd like to introduce our guest star of the evening, one of the screen's all-time favorites, Don Ameche.
Say, Spike, what are you doing here in San Francisco?
Well, my band and I are playing at the Kern Theater.
At the Kern Theater?
Yeah.
And all the time I thought the wind was blowing in from Fisherman's Wharf.
It so happens that the people of San Francisco like my music.
Oh, yeah? Then why did they pass a law? They like it, huh? Then why did they pass a law making it illegal to jump off the Golden Gate Bridge?
They jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge before my band was here.
Yeah, but they didn't stand in line.
Ask any authority on music, and they'll tell you whether my music is good or not.
All right, I'll do just that. My friend, Professor Gazzola, is here. He's an authority on music.
Well, bring him in.
Okay, I'll bring him in.
We'll settle this thing right now.
Well, well, how do you do? I'm a Professor Gazzola.
Professor Don Ameche said that you're an expert on music. What do you think of my band?
Well, how do I know? I never hear him play. What kind of music you make?
All kinds.
Oh, you know how to make Italian music like they play in a Venice, huh? Oh, sole mio, oh, sola you are, oh, sola...
What happened?
I fall right on my gondola.
Well, Professor, we'll give you a chance to hear some of my music. Right now, the City Slickers and I are going to do an opera.
An opera? Oh, well, how's about the letting me sing in the opera?
Well, all right.
What do you call this opera?
It's a new one. It's a mystery story about a murder and how the G-men solve it.
Uh-huh. And what's the name?
This is your F.B. Aida.
Oh, boy, you just waited for me. I'm going to back and spray my throat.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present for the first time a new opera. This is Your F.B. Aida with Professor Don Amici Gazzola. Come with us now to the San Francisco Opera House. The house lights dim, and the conductor mounts the podium. The orchestra tunes up. The conductor raises his baton, and now we hear the overture. As the curtain rises, the stage is dark, so nobody can tell that the curtain has gone up. The scene is the outside of a large suburban house. We see two figures silhouetted against the light. One figure has a weapon in its hand and strikes the other figure down. Murder is being committed. You've just heard the famous aria, "I'll be down to meet you with a sore throat, honey." Since there has been a murder, there must be a detective to track down the murderer. This is the hero of our opera, a G-man.
I am Gazzola of the FBI. I smell the garlic. I am a human bloodhound.
To prove that he is a bloodhound, he puts on his leash and his muzzle and sniffs his way around the office. His nose leads him right to the radio. A bulletin is being broadcast.
Calling a police house out in Precinct 9. Things are really peachy fine. But we'd like to say that in the 10th precinct, a little trouble there, and things really stink.
Upon hearing this, Gazzola springs into action. He places his hand on his Dick Tracy badge and sings the well-known cadenza, "Amor, amor, la fonda, la bazza, stromboli, itzio, pinza." Which means only a fool would drool in his pasta fazool.
I'll trail the killer and track him down. I'm ruthless and persistent. To help me catch him, I have brought along my assistant.
I am the Whistler. And I walk by night. I have to. How can I sleep with all that doggone whistling going on?
In the next scene, we are in the murder house. We see the 300-pound heroine, Aida Plenty. She is supposed to fill out the role of the soprano. She not only fills it out, she overflows it. She has a knife in one hand, a piece of salami in the other. At her feet lies her murdered husband. She is so upset that she can only eat a small piece of the salami. She looks down at him, wipes the mustard off her lips, and sings.
Oh, I'm sorry I killed my poor husband. Oh, I'm sorry I ended his life. I'm sorry I stabbed him, 'cause now I can slice the salami with this knife.
Stricken with emotion, the tears began to run down her ears. You see, her eyes are very far apart. As she stands there in her grief, Gazzola enters. Her grief. Gazzola enters, pops a sen-sen in his mouth, and tenderly croons.
Why did you stab him?
My knife was handy.
You were a sap kid. You could have killed him quicker if you sat up on his lap, kid.
I'm going to slim my figure. I'll not get any bigger.
You'll still look just like Trigger.
Suddenly, Gazzola makes a startling discovery. He tells Aida Plenty what he has found.
You didn't kill this man.
Of course I did.
Oh, no, you're Bobby.
I stabbed him with a knife.
Oh, no, he died from a salami.
A salami.
A salami. Yes, the kid, this is a clear case of a corpus delicatessen.
When Aida hears this, she throws away the salami and starts eating the knife. Gazzola tells Aida that the murderer is the butcher boy, and then Gazzola asks her to become Mrs. Gazzola.
Aida, dear, say you'll be mine. The butcher boy will pay for this crime.
Gazzola, dear, let him go free.
You mean that...
Yes, it's the butcher boy for me.
Oh, no, no, no.
The butcher boy's for me.
Oh, no, no, no.
The butcher boy's for me.
Aida, wed me right away. I'd buy you lots of pizza and spaghetti every day.
With macaroni.
With macaroni.
And minestrone.
And minestrone. You know, you're right, the kid. The butcher boys are for you.
This is Michael Roy speaking for the Coca-Cola Company, saying, whoever you are, whatever you do, wherever you may be, when you think of refreshment, think of Coca-Cola. For Coca-Cola makes any pause the pause that refreshes. And ice-cold Coca-Cola is everywhere. And now here is Spike Jones.
I want to thank Don Amici for being our guest tonight.
Well, I had a wonderful time.
Hey, Spike, who's going to be your guest next week?
Well, no one, Don. This is our last broadcast of the season.
Oh!
But I do want to thank all of the City Slickers. Doodles Weaver, George Roxer, Frederick Gass, Dick Morgan, Freddie Morgan, Dr. Horatio Q. Birdbath, Joe Syracusa, Paul Liu, Dick Gardner, Roger Donnelly, Dick Baldwin, Jay Meyer, Eddie Brandt, Eddie Medcalf, Joe Colvin, Cal Brown, Eileen Gallagher, and Eddie Pripps for helping me have a wonderful season. I'd also like to thank our producer, Joe Bigelow, and our writer, Jay Summers. And, of course, our sponsor, the Coca-Cola Company. As for all our friends and listeners, believe me, you've really been swell. We'll see all of you soon. Until then, so long, music lovers.
Amici appeared through the courtesy of Camel Cigarettes. Spike Jones and his musical depreciation review may be seen in person starting August 4th in Las Vegas, Nevada. Tonight's show came to you transcribed.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
And there you have an action-packed half hour with Spike Jones and his orchestra, with guest Don Amici, and their send-up of This Is Your FBI-ita. How's that for a title? And the Whistler and the Opera Quiz and all of that lampooned in a broadcast from June 25th, 1949. Well, as promised, the show, one of the shows that was spoofed. Next, as old-time radio drama continues, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our story is called Murder on the Range. It comes from September 6, 1946. We have cattle rustling in Idaho, but it is not, I repeat, not by cowboys. And we meet a crook that is as, well, black-hatted as they come, and his nagging wife, whose husband is trying to go straight. Well, it's a great triangle and a great story for This Is Your FBI, Murder on the Range.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This Is Your FBI. This Is Your FBI, the official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, presented as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. Fathers and mothers of America, attention, please. Upon the training you give your children today depends the future of America. Our system of free enterprise, personal liberty, and democracy cannot exist without educated and enlightened citizens. In about 14 minutes, our sponsor, the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States, will have some helpful suggestions for parents. If you wish to equip your children to take advantage of all the opportunities the future offers, don't miss this important message. Tonight's FBI file, Murder on the Range.
Since the time of Eve, there have been nagging wives who drove their mates to commit crimes for the gratification of their own selfish desires. A few of these crimes have made history. The rest, like that in tonight's case from the files of your FBI, have seldom caused more than a ripple on the day-to-day flow of news. But they're important, for each contributes its unit of force to the wave of crime constantly beating against the underpilings of law and order on which society rests. In a Rhodes roadside lunchroom located on a seldom-used Montana highway, Betty Adams, wife of the proprietor, is just handing a check to her lone customer.
Here you are. Comes to 40 cents.
Here's a half a buck, Mrs. Adams. Keep the change.
Thanks.
Good night, ma'am. Good
night.
Betty. Oh, Betty.
Yeah?
That fellow leaves?
Mm-hmm.
Think maybe we should close up?
I think we never should have opened.
Oh, now, Betty, please don't start nagging.
I mean business.
What are you talking about?
I'm fed up with this place. Fed right up to here.
Betty.
I mean it. Either you take me back east or I'm going by myself.
What? We can't leave here now.
Why not?
All we've got in the world is tied up in this place.
Then sell it.
Sell it?
Yeah.
You could hardly give it away since the new road bypasses.
Then let's walk out on it.
Are you kidding?
Find out if I'm kidding. If you don't...
Wait
do
a minute.
Jack, I've already
I
told...
I said wait a minute.
Well?
You seem to have forgotten the main reason why we came out here.
I know. You done a stretch and you wanted to start all over again on the square. Don't wave that flag again.
But, honey...
You could have started all over back east.
Then why'd you come out here with me?
Because I fell for that picture folder talk of yours. And from now on, when I get the bite to see a little scenery, I'll stick a quarter in the Translux and get 10 minutes worth of travel off.
Betty, you've got...
Yes, sir?
Hello, Jack.
Huh? Marty.
That's right.
Where'd you come from?
Just passing by. I thought I'd drop in. Is this the bride, kid?
Yeah. Betty, I want you to meet a guy I used to know back east. This is Marty Williams.
How are you?
How do you do?
Marty, how'd you know I was here?
I forget who gave me the office. I'm glad I remembered it, though.
What do you mean?
Well, I pulled a little job in Seattle to get myself a steak and was heading back east.
Uh-huh.
I got in a game over in Idaho this afternoon and lost my role. There was an argument and I had to wing a guy.
You mean you shot him?
That's right, sweetheart. That's why I headed here.
Oh.
I gotta go under for a few days till they stop beating the brush for me.
Marty, maybe you haven't heard.
What?
I'm square now.
Is that a turndown, kid?
No.
Huh?
If you're in trouble, Mr. Williams, you can stay here as long as you like.
Now, look, Betty...
I said he stays. When did you get up, Mr. Williams?
About an hour ago.
Can I fix you something? Some eggs, maybe?
I already had them. Came in here and cooked my own.
Huh?
Where's Jack?
He'll be down in a minute.
Tell me something, will you?
What?
Is Jack really leveling with that honest John pitch?
Yeah.
Sucker.
I've been trying to tell him that.
This trap looks like it's starving to death.
It is.
And why don't he get off this kick, step out, and steal a few?
Talk to him about it, will you?
I think I will.
Got any ideas?
Yeah. I took a walk around outside a while ago. I saw what might be a real good touch.
Save it for Jack. Here he comes now.
Oh. Good morning, Jack.
Morning, Marty. What got you up so early?
Sunshine, fresh air. I've been up for a walk already.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to be a pretty big ranch around here.
Yeah, it's the T-Bar H. They only got a couple of 100,000 acres.
Where do they sell their cattle?
They drive them to the loading pens in Canyon City, about 10 miles from here, ship them to Omaha.
Well, suppose a man wanted to sell only 4 or 5 head at a time. Still have to ship them to Omaha?
No, he could get rid of them in town.
For how much?
Well, good beef steers are bringing 20, 25 bucks a hundred.
How much is that?
They'll run 800 to 1,000 pounds apiece off the range.
Somewhere around 200 bucks apiece, huh?
Thinking of going into the cattle business?
How many could you get in that truck of yours?
Oh, 4 or 5 head, I guess. But... Hey, wait a minute. What are you getting at?
$1,000 a load and 5 or 6 loads, that'd net us about $3,000 apiece, Jack.
I said, what are you getting at?
I need cash so I can move out of here. That ought to be a good way to get it. Betty, what do you think?
Sounds swell.
I'm not getting mixed up in any cattle rustling.
Remember what I said last night, Jack.
Now listen, Betty,
Marty's come up with an idea that'll give us a stake to get out of here.
But
take it or leave it, Jack. But if you leave it, I'm leaving you.
Some 25 or 30 miles away in the Butte, Montana office of the FBI, Agent in Charge Kearney is standing over the teletype machine as it finishes tapping off a message from Washington headquarters.
Rankin?
Yes, sir?
Rankin, remember the bullet that sheriff over in Idaho sent us the other day? The one they dug out of the fellow wounded in that scrap at the jukebox place?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Washington checked it against the unidentified ammunition file and found a mate.
Oh?
It was fired from a gun known to be owned by a Marty Williams, ex-mobster in the East.
How did it get way out in Idaho?
A description of Williams checks with the description the sheriff got of the man who did the shooting.
Oh, I see.
According to Washington, Williams was last seen around Seattle.
Well, then he must have been headed back east.
Yeah. And since he's bound to be out of Idaho by now, that makes him a fugitive. And our man.
But he's probably out of Montana by now, too.
Unless he decided to go under for a while.
That's pretty hard to do in strange country.
Yes, I know. Anyway, we can tell the sheriff who he was after and then start the ball rolling on Williams ourselves.
I'm in here, Marty.
Oh. Look, when did Jack leave for Canyon City?
Hours ago.
I wonder what's keeping the guy.
I don't know. You know something?
Huh?
I don't care.
Oh, that's how it is, huh?
Uh-huh.
He don't know that, though, does he?
He should.
But he don't. Otherwise, you never could have conned the guy into this cattle swindle.
Guess you're right.
Well, that's too bad. Jack's a nice guy.
Sure. If you like nice guys.
You don't?
Uh-uh.
What do you like?
Heels.
Like me?
Yeah, I like you.
You don't have to sound so unhappy.
Well, you'd be unhappy, too, if you made a career of it.
Going for heels?
Yeah.
Come here.
Hmm?
I said come here.
Well?
Look, sweetheart. I feel the same way.
Hi, Betty.
Hi.
Marty.
Oh, hi.
I'm sorry I took so long.
What happened?
4 trips and the guy don't ask any questions. This time he wants to know something. He wants to know why a big outfit like T-Bar H is selling stuff local. And only 4 or 5 headed a crack.
What did you tell him?
Well, it was lucky I remembered something I heard one of the T-Bar H hands say in here one night. About how the old man was letting him run a few head of his own on the side.
With the T-Bar H brand on him?
I don't know.
You tell the guy in town the steers are yours and the old man's letting you run them on the side and all the time they got the T-Bar H brand on them?
Okay, but
what big brains you got? You boys better go out of business fast.
He swallowed what I told him.
That's what you think.
Okay, I'll prove it.
How?
Well, we were getting our last load tonight anyway. So I'll drive him in and sell him just like the rest. How's that, Marty?
Come on. It'll be dark by the time we get over to the range.
Okay, that's it. That's 4.
And room for 1 more.
I guess so.
This part of the job is a cinch.
What do you mean?
All the Western movies I ever saw had a bunch of cowboys sitting around a fire singing and playing the guitar with a couple of more out riding around the herd.
They don't ride herd except in the spring for Brandon and the fall for Roundup.
And the rest of the time, all these stakes run loose like this, begging to be picked off?
Well, every few days, one of the hands rides out to check the herd scattered over the range.
You must have timed things just right, between checks.
We've been lucky, Marty.
Well, let's get number five and get out of here.
Okay. Swing that lantern over here.
Okay. All right. How about Toots there with a white face?
Okay, let's... Wait a minute.
What's the matter?
Shh, listen.
What's cooking?
I'd have sworn I heard a horse, Winnie.
Yeah?
If I did, we're not by ourselves out here. Give me that lantern. Let's douse the light in case.
Hold on there, you fellas.
Give me that lantern.
Never mind putting out that lantern. Whoa, whoa, boy. Easy, easy. Just stand where you are. Where? You ain't just helping yourselves. Hey. Don't I know you?
What?
Sure I do. You're Jack Adams, the fella that runs that eating joint over at the
That's
old...
That's enough for me.
No, no, Marty, wait.
Hey, look here. I wouldn't make no more trouble if I were...
Oh! Oh, oh. Lock the back end of the truck, Jack. We're getting out of here.
Well, why don't you tell me what happened?
We ain't got time for that.
Yeah, but
all
I got it.
All you need to know is they shot a guy and we got a lamb out of here. Jack.
Yeah?
Get moving, will you?
I'm not leaving here, Marty.
Huh?
I said I'm not leaving.
Don't be a fool, Jack.
It's too late for that. I was a fool when I let you nag me into stealing the cattle in the first place.
So you're going to stay here and let them come and get you?
I'm not going to wait for that. I'm going to give myself up.
You don't expect me to stay here, do you?
No, no. You can beat it right now with my share of the dough. You worked hard enough for it.
Okay, Jack. If you want to play noble and take the rap.
I'm not that noble, Marty.
What do you mean?
This was your job, too.
But nobody knows it was me.
I know it was you.
What?
And I'm not taking the rap for both of us. So you might as well let Betty have your car and stick around with me.
I said nobody knows it was me. And nobody's going to know it, Jack.
Why not?
Because you're not going to be able to tell them. Sweetheart, that should make me your favorite heel.
We will return in just a moment to tonight's FBI file. Now, it's time for our weekly series of questions and answers on education.
First question, who is the most enthusiastic believer in college education? A college president? A high school principal?
Neither one. Surprisingly, the answer is the man who succeeded in spite of not having gone to college. He knows that leadership demands a background of knowledge which, if it is not developed in college, can only be acquired by years of laborious effort.
How do we know self-made men feel this way about college?
Well, the Equitable Society has a plan called the Equitable Educational Fund, whereby far-sighted parents make sure, through life insurance, that their children will be well-educated no matter what happens. And a very high proportion of Equitable Educational Funds are taken out by parents who did not go to college themselves.
Second question. What is an equitable educational fund?
It is a plan that includes these important features. One, the Equitable Educational Fund makes sure that money for education will be ready when your child is ready. Two, if you die, the educational fund becomes fully established. If you are totally and permanently disabled, the educational fund continues to build up without any further payment. Three, educational costs are spread out over many years instead of being concentrated in a few.
Last question. How much will it cost to send your son or daughter to college?
That question is answered in a memorandum that tells the cost of tuition, board, and lodging in 192 leading American colleges. In addition, it summarizes the long-range opportunities open to educated men and women in 29 industries and professions, such as architecture, dentistry, engineering, chemistry, life insurance, social service. The memorandum is crammed with information that every parent should have. Your nearest Equitable Society representative has a copy and will be glad to show it to any sincerely interested parent. Call him tomorrow. You'll find him in the phone book under Equitable Society.
That's E-Q-U-I-T-A-B-L-E.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. And now, back to the FBI file, Murder on the Range.
The average law-abiding citizen attributes great strength to every criminal. But criminals are not strong. They're weaklings. They become criminals because they cannot resist temptation. The temptation to take something for nothing. And therein lies their fatal mistake. The mistake that ultimately proves their undoing. Because one of the laws by which human beings live is called the law of compensation. And that law says that the only thing you get for nothing is nothing. About the time that Marty Williams sent a bullet crashing into the unprotected body of Jack Adams, a horse was pounding along a moonlit trail heading for the home corral.
Hey, what's going on here? Well,
give me a hand. Help me off.
Sure, but what's wrong?
Caught two fellas. Huh? Dry Creek Canyon stealing cows.
What?
One of them threw lead at me before I could... Ooh,
come on, now. I'll help you at the old man's house. Jim, it's Hank. He's hurt. Take care of his horse, will you? Come on. Easy now.
Yeah.
See? Who was that?
One of them runs that eating joint over on the old road.
What, Jack Adams?
Yeah. Never seen the other before.
What'd he look like?
Didn't get a good look at him. Why?
Well, all the outfits around got a warning from them FBI men in Butte today to keep an eye peeled for a man that done a little shooting crossing Idaho a few days ago.
Yeah?
Maybe it ain't the same one, but as soon as we get the slug out of here, I'm going to call the FBI like they said and get him over here.
Got your stuff packed, baby?
Yeah, all set. Let's get started.
Okay, you get into my car and head on for Butte.
Wait a minute.
Huh?
What's the idea?
There's a truck outside with nearly a grand worth of moo cows in it, sweetheart.
Marty, you're not going to try
to... Don't worry. News of what happened tonight won't get around before tomorrow.
Yeah, but suppose...
I'll drive on into Canyon City with them tonight, sell them first thing in the morning, head for Butte, ditch the truck, pick you up, and we're gone.
Where'll I wait for you?
Register at the Black Hotel. Use the name of Madison. Mrs. John Madison.
Okay.
Now get started.
Be careful, Marty.
Get started.
I certainly wouldn't think Adams would still be sticking around the road stand, Connie.
Probably not, Rankin, but we might pick up a lead there as to where they've gone.
You think the other fellow could be the man Williams were after?
Didn't get enough description of him from the cow waddy to tell for sure, but if this Jack Adams is the one I'm thinking about, and I'm pretty sure Marty Williams is the one who did the shooting.
Oh, how do you get that?
From Williams' record I got from Washington. He and a Jack Adams were mixed up in a gang back east, and they served a term together.
Oh.
Anyway, the slug from the cowboy's chest will tell us for sure when we get it in the lab.
But in the meantime...
Yes, I know time's a-wasting unless we get quicker evidence. Here's the road stand now. Go ahead, Rankin.
Thanks. Lights are out.
Just the same, be careful. Come on. You try the door.
It's open.
Okay, give me your flashlight.
Right here.
Thanks. Let's go in. Don't turn on the lights. This is far enough.
What?
Look. On the floor there.
Well.
I think that's the body of Jack Adams. Yeah. Let me have a look.
Is it the same Jack Adams you were talking about?
Yes. I'd say that description checks.
Well, then that means that...
Marty Williams.
But where's Adams' wife?
Williams can probably answer that, too. The boys at the ranch seem to think she was pretty fickle.
What did you find?
Papers. Adams' pocket here. Look like cattle receipts. Five of them.
Well, then they must have been working before tonight.
Looks like they've already sold about 25 head.
Where?
Canyon City.
That's about 10 miles from here.
Yeah. And Williams must have taken the load they got tonight to Canyon City. Let's go.
Well,
Who is it?
Molly.
Oh, it's Seth. Come on in, honey.
Okay. We got trouble.
What?
The guy at the stock pen gave me a funny look and went off somewhere, so I dumped the cows and beat it for here.
Think you went for the cops?
I wasn't taking any chances.
Anybody could tell you're not a ranch hand. You shouldn't have gone in the first place.
Skip that now. Let's get going.
Tonight?
The sooner the safer, baby.
What'd you do with the truck?
I left it there. Come on, get your stuff and let's roll.
Yes, sir. The man you're talking about drove in here at the stock pen several hours ago.
Where is he now?
Well, he looked suspicious to me, so I slipped off to get a deputy. But when I came back with him, the fellow had gone.
Cows and all?
No, sir. They're right over there in his truck.
Rankin?
Yes, sir.
Look that truck over, will you?
Right.
Look, this man that drove the truck, was there a woman with him?
No, sir.
Now, where's the deputy now?
He lit out for Butte.
What for?
Well, he found out that this fellow who came here with the cows hired a car.
To take him to Butte?
He thought so, yes.
Mr. Carney.
Yes, Rankin?
I found this road map in the truck.
Oh, good. Let me see it.
It's marked.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get back to Butte. But first, we'll call ahead and charter a plane.
Well, baby... there's the lights of Sioux City firing up the sky just ahead.
I won't know how to act back in civilization again, Marty.
Pretty soon, good old Chicago.
And then?
Then we'll take this steak we got back in Montana and run it up into plenty of living for both of us.
If Montana don't catch up with it.
Forget it, sweetheart. Forget it.
Marty, look.
Huh?
Those red lights strung across the road ahead. You better slow down.
Yeah, I guess they're fixing the road.
Somebody waving a flashlight.
Maybe it's an accident. Hey, what's cooking, pal? I say what? Hey, what's the idea of flashing that light in my face?
Welcome to Sioux City, Williams.
What?
And you too, Mrs. Adams.
Who are you?
What is this?
We're special agents of the FBI from Butte, Montana.
How'd you know we'd be here?
You left a blueprint for us.
Huh?
That map we found in your truck, it had your route all marked out.
Marty, you left a map so they could follow it?
I forgot it.
Why, you stupid fool!
I suggest that you save your arguments for the courtroom when you're tried for murder.
Marty Williams was sentenced to be executed for the murder of Jack Adams. Mrs. Adams, implicated in both the murder and the cattle rustling by Williams' testimony at his trial, is now serving a long prison term. The fate of these two petty criminals was, on the whole, unimportant. But it points out what your FBI has constantly attempted to prove to every citizen who might be tempted to make that first fateful step toward a career of crime. That no one makes crime a profitable profession for very long. It is possible to maintain a temporary advantage over the law, but sooner or later, the law must win. Whether the law be represented by your FBI, your local law enforcement agency, or both, remember that the criminal is not strong. The real strength of the nation is in the solemn dignity of the law. In just a moment, we'll tell you about next week's exciting story from the files of your FBI. And now again, let me remind you to check with your Equitable Society representative about the safest and wisest investment a parent can make for his children's future, an Equitable Educational Fund. Without obligation, he will also show you the Equitable Society's memorandum on the costs of higher education and some of the opportunities it opens. You'll find your Equitable Society representative in the phone book under the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. next week, we will bring you another colorful story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Death for a Draft Dodger. The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Life Assurance Society's broadcast are adapted from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of persons living or dead is accidental. Tonight, the music was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner. The author was Frank Ferries, and your narrator was Dean Carlton. This is Your FBI, is a Jerry Devine production. This is Milton Cross speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community, and inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time when the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States will bring you another thrilling story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Death for a Draft Dodger on This Is Your FBI.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
Attempts at reform and attempts at the depths of cruelty and murder on the range. This is Your FBI, a broadcast from September 6th, 1946. Shortly to that other show that was spoofed by Spike Jones tonight, that's The Whistler, with Death in the Air next. You're listening to Old Time Radio Drama on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.